Well, it's really important that when you're doing a task, that you follow the instructions. Because if you don't follow the instructions, you can get yourself in quite a mess and cause all kinds of unexpected problems. I found that out last fall. My bathroom shower downstairs stopped working properly. It's one of those single handle ones that you pull out to turn it on, push in to turn it off, and you turn it back and forth to adjust the water. So I went to turn it off, and it wouldn't turn off. I tried it again and tried it again and tried it again, it wouldn't turn off. I finally had to go and shut the water off to the whole downstairs portion of the house to shut the water off properly. Now, I'd had this happen about 4 or 5 years before, so I knew what I had to do. There was a replacement cartridge that I had to go get, and I had to take the one cartridge out and put the other one in. So I went to Home Depot and picked up my replacement cartridge and came home that night. And it's like a, should be like a 10, 15 minute job. There's a little cap on the handle, you pop the cap off. There's a little screw into the handle, you take that off. There's a sleeve, a metal sleeve that goes over the cartridge into the wall. You take your pliers and you pull that off. And then there's a cartridge and there's a little brass clip that goes down and holds the cartridge into place. So you take your needle-nosed pliers and you pull that off. You pull the cartridge out and then you just put it all back together again. So I got it out and put the new cartridge in and went to put the clip on and didn't want to go down properly. It was going all the way down on the right, but not on the left. So I pulled it off and adjusted it and tried it again. It's going down on the right, not on the left. So I tried it a couple more times and pulled it back off and tried it. And then it was going about halfway down, but it wasn't going down far enough for the sleeve to slide back over the top of it. So I thought, I'll just persuade it a little bit. So I got the persuader, better known as a hammer, and I started pounding on the little clip while I'm pounding on it, and pling, one of the legs broke off. So I had to go back into Home Depot and buy another little clip for it. You know, they're little brass, very thin. And so put it back on, tried to get it to go into place properly, and same thing. It's going down on one side, not on the other. So I took the cartridge out and readjusted it again, put it back in, same thing. And then I finally got it again where it was going mostly down, and I tried to persuade it down again. Pling, it broke off. So I had to go back into Home Depot again. So this time I thought, well, I'm going to get like three clips. So I bought my three clips and I came back, and now I've got about 2.5 hours into something that should have taken me 10 minutes. I break the next two clips. So I'm down to my last clip, and I thought, maybe I should stop here. Because although I'm not the handiest person, as you probably have figured out with this story, I'm not the handiest person. Working at Home Depot, everybody else around me is handy guys and gals. I mean, so there is this one guy in particular, a Christian friend of mine, Steve Weston, and he's been department head in plumbing, he's been department head in hardware, in electrical, he's now the head of the service desk because he also knows computers in addition to how to fix everything else. So I talked to him and he said, well, I'll come over to your house and we'll take a look at it. So we went over there that evening and he went in and he goes, where's the instructions? Instructions? They're in the waste paper basket over here. So I fished them out of the waste paper basket and he looked at it and he said, where's the old cartridge? I'm like, oh, that's in the waste paper basket too. He says, can I see that? So, okay. So I gave him the old cartridge and he looked at it for a minute and he took his little finger and he stuck it into the pipe and pulled it back, and there was a little black piece of hard rubber that was in there. And I go, how did you know that was in there? And he said, well, right here it says, warning, sometimes pieces can break off of the old cartridge and the new one won't slide in all the way. So then he took the new cartridge, slid it in, took the little brass thing, plink, right back into place, and he was done in like about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And he said, Rob, it's always important to read the instructions thoroughly. So, when you talk to people about Jesus today and ask them who Jesus is, you can get all kinds of different answers. Some people will tell you, oh, Jesus was a good man. Other people will say, oh, he was a great moral teacher. If you talk to a Muslim, he'll say that Jesus is a prophet. If you talk to somebody that's a Jehovah's Witness, they'll say that that before he walked on the earth, Jesus was Michael the Archangel, and he was brother with Lucifer. I found that interesting. The Mormons also believe that, and they believe that Jesus existed in another existence before this earth, and he lived a really good moral life, and was evolved enough that he could be the God of this world, and that every good Mormon man can live a good enough life, they can be the God of another world in the future. So this is all really confusing to me. So what's the answer? Well, the Bible makes it very clear that Jesus is the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, and that we need to worship him. So, how can we know that Jesus is God? We can know that Jesus is God because the Father commands all creation to worship Jesus. So let's look at, we're going to be in Hebrews chapter 1. We're going to go through the whole chapter, 1 through 14, and let's look at the first two verses to start off with. Long ago, God spoke to the fathers by the prophets at different times and in various ways. In these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son. God has appointed him heir of all things and made the universe through him. When I was a teenage boy, I had one of these. And for you teenagers, you probably don't know what the heck this is. This is a transistor radio. And you're laughing at it, but back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s, this was quite revolutionary. And it was pretty cool. You know, you got your volume control here, and we'll see if I can get it to work. See, it's got nice sound to it. It's only got one speaker, but, you know, you would walk around, you'd carry it up by your ear, and it was a little tinny, but, you know, that's okay. And I used to love this, you know, having my transistor radio, and from a young age, I loved music a lot, and so I would listen to, you know, I'd listen to the Beach Boys, I'd listen to the Righteous Brothers. I used to love the Four Seasons. They were one of my favorite groups. I listened to a lot of the Motown artists, and Bobby Vinton was my favorite soloist. You probably don't even know who Bobby Vinton was, but so my little transistor radio did a great job for me listening to all those artists. Until one day, when I was a freshman in high school, we went to the Peristyle Theater in Toledo, and we heard the Toledo Symphony and the Toledo Chorale performing Handel's Messiah. And I was blown away at the incredible difference in the sound. You know, any concert theater is set up where the acoustics just makes it feel like you're surrounded by music. It felt to me like I was sitting right in the orchestra pit, right next to the conductor. You know, I could hear the chorus on one side, the drums were behind me, the horns were in front of me, you know, the violins were on the other side. It was just an incredible experience. And in the same way, God revealed attributes about himself in the Old Testament. And we got bits and pieces about what God is like, and through the prophets, and you could get a little bit here and a little bit there, and you could study it and try and figure things out. But when Jesus came and walked the earth, we really got a full idea of God's greatness. We could see Jesus, you know, God's compassion for us through Jesus' healing the sick, raising the dead. We could see God's great wisdom through his teachings like the Sermon on the Mount and the different parables that he taught. You could see God's power from things like Jesus walking on the water, turning a few loaves and fishes into enough food to feed 5,000 people, to Jesus and the apostles being on the Sea of Galilee in a great storm, and these fishermen who were experienced men on this lake so afraid that they thought they were going to die, and all Jesus had to do was stand up and say, "Peace, be still," and the water calmed down and the wind died down and it was peaceful. And we could see God's love for us through his death on the cross, that he was willing to come and die on the cross for us to pay for our sins. So again, it's sort of like this. Here's the Old Testament.
150,000 women all over the world for their children.
Okay.
How did this happen?
That's the Old Testament. Now here's the New Testament. Idea. So let's look at verses 3 and 4 now. The sun is the radiance of God's glory and the exact expression of his nature, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After making purifications for sins, he sat down at the right hand of majesty on high. So he became higher in rank than the angels, just as the name he inherited is superior to theirs. We can't look directly into the sun because it would blind us, but we can know about the sun's attributes by studying the light and heat and other properties of the sun. In the same way, we would know very little about God apart from the revelation that we receive through Jesus. Just as the rays of light tell us about the physical sun, Jesus reveals God's love and compassion for us. So how can we know that Jesus is God? We can know that Jesus is God because the Father commands all creation to worship Jesus. Well, let's look at verses 5 through 7 now. For to which of the angels did he ever say, "You are my son, today I have become your father"? Or again, "I will be his father, and he will be my son"? When he again brings his firstborn into the world, he says, "And all God's angels must worship him." And about the angels, he says, "He makes his angels winds, and his servants a fiery flame." I want to focus in on two things in verse 6 here real quick. The first part is where it refers to Jesus as his firstborn in the world. Now, some groups would say that means that Jesus was a created being and that he's not God. So I did a little research into this, and this word in Greek is prototokos, and it refers to rank, not that he was created, but that Jesus, God the Son, is first in rank because he created all things. And so in Exodus 4:22, it refers to Israel as God's firstborn. Israel was not the first nation created, far from it. There was many Egypt and many other civilizations before them. But the Jews are God's chosen people, and they were first in rank, you know, among the nations. And then the second thing that I want to look at is a little bit farther in, and it says, and all God's angels must worship him. So, who are we allowed to worship? Let's look at, we're going to look at Exodus chapter 20, and we're going to look through verses 1 through 5. And so, and you'll find this very familiar, I'm sure. This is the first two of the Ten Commandments. And God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sins of the parents to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me. So God makes it very clear that we're not to worship any other created being. We're to worship God himself. And so there's no way, based on the Ten Commandments, that Jesus is a created being. He's God the Son. He's existed in eternity past. He exists now. He'll exist in eternity future. So let's look at verses 8 and 9. But to the Son, your throne, God, is forever and ever, and the scepter of your kingdom is the scepter of justice. You have loved righteousness and hated lawlessness. This is why God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of joy rather than your companions. So right away in the first verse there, in verse 8, this is the Father speaking to the Son, and he says, your throne, God. So the Father is making it very clear that Jesus, the Son of God, is God. He's not a created being. And he says, your throne is forever and ever. So again, Jesus existed in eternity past, had no start. He exists now, and he will exist for all eternity in the future. He'll have no end. And his throne will exist all that time. So how do we know that Jesus is God? We can know that Jesus is God because the Father commands all creation to worship Jesus. Now, some will object and say that Jesus never said that he was God. You know, there are some groups that say that. So let's look at that for a minute. Let's look at John chapter 8, verses 58 and 59. Jesus said to them, I assure you, before Abraham was, I am. At that they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus was hidden and went out of the temple complex. Well, what exactly is Jesus saying here, and why did the Pharisees and the other people get so upset? Well, let's contrast that. Now let's look at Exodus chapter 3, verses 13 and 14, and we'll see the answer to that. Then Moses asked God, if I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask, what is his name? What should I tell them? God replies to Moses, I am who I am. That is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. So here, you know, when we go back to John again, you can see that what Jesus was telling them was that he is the great I am. He is God. He was identifying himself as God and leaving no doubt about it. And that's why the Jews got so upset and were going to stone him to death, because they knew exactly what he was saying. And so he was not leaving them any leeway. They had to worship him as God. He showed all the signs that was predicted that he would show. And he was saying that before Abraham existed, which was 2,000 years before Jesus walked on the earth, he existed. He was there at the creation of the world. So let's look at the last four verses. Verse 10. In the beginning, Lord, you established the earth, and the heavens are the works of your hands. They will perish, but you remain. They will wear out like clothing. You will roll them up like a cloak, and they will be changed like a robe. But you are the same, and your years will never end. Now to which of the angels has he ever said, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool? Are they not ministering spirits sent out to serve those who are going to inherit salvation? So the first thing that jumped out at me when I was reading through this section was in verse 10, in the beginning, Lord, you established the earth, and the heavens are the works of your hands. That sounds almost identical to Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So here's the Father saying that Jesus, God the Son, created the heavens and the earth. Again, leaving no doubt that Jesus is God. The Father makes it very plain that Jesus is God. He is superior to the angels. He existed before creation. Everything that has ever existed was created by Jesus. The Father commands us to worship Jesus as God. Jesus is God Almighty. Worship Him. As the worship team comes forward, let me invite anyone who's in need of prayer or anyone who wants to give their life to Jesus to come forward during the song.